You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
All right, welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner, front and center this hour. The return of volatility. Stocks are falling. The VIX is spiking. And concerns about the rally keep rising. The investment committee sizing up all of these things as we head into the weekend. Joining me for the hour, Amy Raskin, Steve Weiss, Kevin Simpson, Jim Labenthal, everybody at Post 9. We do check the markets. We're off the worst levels. Dow still down 300. S&P's good for about a 50-point decline. You see it's given up 5,200 yesterday. It's 5,150. We'll call it that. NASDAQ's the worst today. So let's size this up, Weiss, on where we're at, okay? So you got, you know, considerable geopolitical concerns ahead of a weekend, and yes. I think that plays a big role.
Yes.
It's hard to be long if you're worried about Israel and Iran. You missed the inflation expectations there, missed. I said the VIX is up, oil's up, bonds are up, dollar's up, gold's up.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, when you look at the only green on my screen that's up away from Apple, and I know we'll talk about that later, it's Leidos, it's Lockheed. And why is that? It's because that the story's coming out that Iran's going to attack Israel in the next 2 days. And then you have the other story, which is Biden has committed to defending Israel. So you don't want to go home long with that kind of setup for the weekend, because you'll see oil spike, you'll see inflation. But what's surprising to me, first of all, was yesterday. I see no reason for the market to have had that move yesterday. It was quite a benign, or almost quite benign, PPI number, but not fully. You know, not fully at all. So I was perplexed by yesterday. Today does not surprise me, though. So I think you're still in this situation where investors are adjusting to maybe no rate hike. So the biggest question now is if, not when. And if it's if, then it's only one, maybe two. So that is the difference. You take the geopolitical uncertainty.
Yeah.
You take commodities still going higher. And you take the dialogue that the narrative we're hearing from Jamie Dimon, from Larry Fink, et cetera. Inflation's not getting down to their level anytime soon. So then the entire bet, will the market continue to have this surprising resilience, and will the economy have this surprising resilience to such long and such a swift rate hiking cycle and be able to wait it out?
So, since you mentioned Jamie Dimon, Amy Dimon today says, as part of their earnings release in the call, we remain alert to a number of significant uncertain forces, an unsettling global landscape, including terrible wars and violence. One such factor introducing uncertainty both into JPM's business and the broader economy. I mean, rate cuts are not off the table.
Sure.
They've just been pushed out. Even all the Fed speakers this week who want to push them out are still talking about
eventually
wanting to cut rates
at
some point this year. But, you know, you can't dismiss Diamond's comments. We do have the geopolitical concerns, and the move in commodities is unsettling in and of itself in some respects.
Right. And I think, to Steve's point, I think this started last week. Well, last week we got a lot of better economic data, but the market wasn't up. And I think that's a really interesting point, because we're moving from this narrative, which we came into the year, that we were going to have a deflationary boom or disinflationary boom. Inflation was going to continue to come down, but earnings growth was going to be very strong. And now we still have the earnings growth story, but we don't have the disinflation story. So maybe the narrative is shifting to an inflationary boom. If that's the case, what you want to own is different. You want to own commodities. You want to own value over growth. You want to own the short duration over long duration. And it's just a different narrative. And I feel like the market is sort of slowly moving to that other narrative. Whether that's right or not still is to be determined.
I mean, Jim,
you still have
a disinflationary environment. It's not like, you know, I get that, you know, a couple of the CPI and PPI related prints were a little hotter than people wanted. PCE what the Fed looks at more than anything else is still moving in the right direction. And it's been highlighted by some Fed speakers over the last couple of days as one of the reasons why they still think there's going to be confidence to cut rates at some point this year, even if it's later and by less than some had originally focused on. But let's focus simply on the here and now, because, you know, you do have a turbulent week. You are heading into a weekend where you could get some geopolitical headlines that are going to be unsettling. Who knows? But we do have to pay attention to the return of volatility. Maybe it lasts a little bit. And what Diamond's talking about in the context of the entire market landscape now and where the narrative has shifted to.
Yeah. So I'm going to say something negative, Scott, but I don't want it to be taken as Labenthal is negative on the markets overall for the rest of the year. Right now, I'm a little negative, and there's a very specific reason why. We've had some earnings reports this week that were frankly dynamite. I don't care whether it's Delta, BlackRock, or Citigroup, and all three of those stocks sold off on the news. Well, they didn't sell off on the news. They sold off on the context for this market right now, which is, and I'll grant you, Scott and Amy, you were both right, that disinflation is still intact. The PCE still has a two handle, but the unfortunate truth is there's a discussion now that is not outlandish of not just when will the Fed cut rates, but will they cut rates at all? And might they even hike rates? Let me be clear. I'm not saying they're going to hike rates. I'm saying it's not an outlandish discussion to have. Let me put it to you this way. Going into this year, I was very bullish. And if somebody, maybe you, Scott, had said to me on January 1, would you be bullish, Jimmy, if the CPI missed and was hotter than expected 3 months in a row? And the answer is no, I wouldn't. Would I be bullish if oil, which was at $70 a barrel coming into the year, is now at $86? No, I wouldn't. The only thing that is different in that scenario is that the market continues to retain this very high level. The reason for that most likely is economic strength in the labor market, which shows no signs of going away. But in the short term, and this is the takeaway, I've got some cash from trimming stocks. Mm-hmm. I am not buying today. I just can't buy in a tape where you have responses like I've seen in those stocks and where you've had a third month in a row of CPI hotter than expected. I'm going to sit tight for a little bit.
Kev, are the bulls kidding themselves a bit and thinking that this is all going to just work out? I go back to Diamond of, you know, his comments in a week or so ago where the market's pricing in 70 to 80% soft landing. He thinks that's, you know, way too high. Larry Fink sitting, you know, in one of these seats earlier today talks about it's going to be hard to get down to 2% on inflation. Or as long as we think the Fed is still going to cut at some point this year and we have this economic, you know, boon that is just more resilient than people have ever expected it would be, does that just overshadow any of the possible negatives, even the geopolitical ones, which, you know, they don't tend to be longer lasting or have a extraordinarily dramatic impact more than a couple of days at most?
Let's take the geopolitical part out of it, because I think we said the same thing about Ukraine that's still going on. So let's hope that we get through the weekend unscathed with anything that happens in the Middle East. But I think the bull narrative is intact, and I don't think we need any rate cuts. We want rate cuts. Rate cuts are great, but we don't need them. And the markets prove that. We didn't get one in March. We didn't get one in, we won't get it in May. We won't get it in June. The reason that the stock market can move higher is because of growth and earnings. Now, let's say that earnings don't deliver. We had great earnings today, and these stocks are selling off on news. If earnings don't deliver, then we should expect 8, 9, 10% pullbacks on these markets. But even with that, Scott, the longer-term bull narrative is still intact because the next move will be a rate cut. Whether it's this year or next year, I don't think they're going to be raising rates. I think we'll go into a rate cut cycle.
That's the argument that you and me had the other day, because I agree with Kevin Simpson. If the market didn't believe that, we wouldn't be where we are. Until that narrative changes, does anything really change?
Well, to Kevin's point, and the question I would ask is, how long can corporate earnings stay ahead of where rates are? Because it's the first time in history you had one of the quickest hike cycles in history. And in every other time with slower hike cycles, with peak rates being lower than where they are now, the economy has gone in a recession or close to it.
Sure, but you didn't go into any of those other hiking cycles with the amount of stimulus that you had in the system.
No, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right.
That's been the greatest game changer in the history of this economic cycle.
Right, right. So now you've got to bet. Now you've got to bet on the next administration. Who's it going to be? If it's Trump, he says, hey, enough stimulus. Republicans are saying enough stimulus. And, you know, We don't know if he'll live up to his word. That'd be a rare occurrence. But away from that, there's so many things you got to bet on. But if everything else is constant, I can guarantee you, okay, that the rates, where if they stay where they are for another extended period of time, that earnings are going to suffer. We've taken earnings down the most in advance of this earnings reporting period.
By about
since
half, 2019. Right, in terms of where earnings growth is.
Yeah.
The other issue that I think we need to get into is what Michael Hartnett of Bank America is talking about today, where he looks at their flow show, where he says markets are looking bubbly. And he looks at the price action of the market of when you have higher yields and then the NASDAQ also moving higher in the face of higher yields, that is typical of what he says bubbly markets, points to 1999. No landing equals bubble risk, a period in which stocks lead yields higher, but also means higher inflation and cost of capital. So you have the largest U.S. large cap outflow since December of 2022. Amy, what do I make of that? Are we looking past the idea that yields have moved higher of late and the NASDAQ just keeps humming along? NASDAQ's coming off a record close.
That's the issue. I mean, and again, to Steve's point, if you expect rate cuts, you're okay, because then you're going to have the interest rates coming down and that should help growth stocks. But if that gets delayed, with a market at 21 times and a large cap growth PE of over 30 times, and you're at a 5% Fed funds rate and a 4.5% 10-year, that gets to be a much harder equation. And I think that is sort of what we're seeing, is some of this rotation under the surface.
Because to that point, there's never been a period like now where you've got growth multiples in the market in a very restrictive economic or interest rate environment. Now, it's obviously because of the stimulus, to your point, but you just have to understand how prescient that is, and precedents like that don't last forever.
Right.
No, but that's another reason why the Fed is mindful of that.
Yes.
And it's probably going to be one of the things that spurs them to cut rates.
Right.
They don't want policy to be too restrictive and too tight for too long.
Right.
Right.
Or they risk a major error.
Well, I agree with that. However, what's the biggest error? The biggest errors they've got to look at are what are directly focused on their mandate, which is employment. And we're at historically low employment, so they've definitely got room there, right? You could see unemployment almost double, at least go up 60% before, to get to around 5% or 6% before they really start to worry. Now, they won't wait for it to get there. They'll focus on the trend. And the other mandate, which I would argue is more important, is inflation. So they're not focused on avoiding a recession. They're focused on making sure inflation doesn't remain a very, very strong problem going forward, because that's what actually kills civilizations, what kills countries. And we've seen that in Latin America repeatedly. Uprisings because inflation there, not close to ours, I mean 100%, 150%, but you can't ignore it.
I'm going back to the Hartnett thing, Kevin. I want to talk about it, because if you look at the, you know, the growthy gains from the mega, it's not only the mega cap stocks, by the way. In fact, maybe it's everything but the mega caps within the growth universe. A lot of chips. I got software, I got AI plays. Micron's up 88% since the October bottom. Taiwan Semi's up 67%. Lam, Broadcom, Cloudflare, AMD. We're talking 70% gains in that universe. You don't want to look at those? Okay. Why don't you look at non-profitable tech? Why don't you look at some of the Cathie Wood type names that are in the ARK? That ETF's up 38% since the October bottom. Coinbase is up 265%. Robinhood's up more than 100%. Block, almost 100%. CRISPR, up 60%. UiPath, up 41%. Is Hartnett onto something?
Yeah, I mean, when you put those names into the conversation, bubbly is an understatement. I mean, it's crazy to think that these companies can have this type of return without any earnings to justify it. And if we look back to the October 27th lows, I mean, the market's up so much in 5 months. We don't get periods like this without a pullback, without some exhaustion. So I feel like the narrative that markets are frothy, that they're bubbly, is 100% spot on. And if you were going to be investing at all, you need to be investing in the profitable businesses. If I had any one of those names, I'd be a seller right now.
The other idea that Goldman's Tony Pascarella puts forth today is the, you know, the divergence between the movement in the mega caps and the idea of when you're going to get rate cuts, the implied rate cuts. So we're going to show you a chart. which he sent out to his clients today. And you can obviously see the tech basket way up while the number of implied cuts goes down. Now, he would suggest, Tony would, so that's reason why you need to keep your eye on the ball and basically go big or go home. And Jim, stay in these stocks. You could also, however, bring this chart back to Hartnett, I think, and say, hey, look at that. Look how much mega cap stocks and growth stocks have gone up, even as expectations of rate cuts have gone down. Does that chart right there speak bubble?
To answer the second question first, I don't think I'm going to tug on Superman's cape today, at least. All right. So let's just assume that mega cap stocks in a slowing growth environment, mega cap tech is going to do just fine. But to the first part of his question, or at least what's implied in there, non-mega cap techs are going to have a hard time. And look, there's a simple you can look at financials today, folks. Why are they laboring today? Even if you try to find fault with J.P. Morgan's earnings, it was still pretty darn good, highly profitable company. I'm going to tell you Citigroup was fabulous and BlackRock. Fabulous. Why are the stocks down? Very simple reason. We're going to have an inverted yield curve for longer, and that's going to weigh on net interest income. Now, again, nothing I'm saying is fatal, but what I am saying is that this is a hard time to step in today when on the back of today of this week's news, you're going to likely have an inverted yield curve for longer, along with higher rates for longer. It's just hard to get really enthusiastic about financials.
I mean, Steve, both what Hartnett is saying and what Pasquarello is showing can technically be true.
Yep.
Where Pasquarello says, hey, this is a reminder to keep your eye on the ball. Don't overcomplicate it. Look at what's working. That trend is intact.
Right.
Well, that trend being intact can ultimately lead to a bubble. If those stocks continue to go up as the implied rate cuts go down,
right,
that sort of flies in the face of at least part of what the market narrative is about.
Not if their earnings deliver.
Yeah. Well, if they deliver, but even so, if the earnings deliver, I mean, they're assuming the earnings are going to deliver. And the sell in the news that we saw in financials, you could possibly see it in the mega caps unless they
I would say that that is unlikely.
Well, I would say because they typically just they don't just beat. I mean, they really beat. But I'd be hard pressed to think of a quarter where the financials didn't sell off on the reports, despite really good reports. It just seems tradition.
Look at what J.P. Morgan did into the number.
Right.
What is J.P. Morgan? I'll have it right in front of me. But you tell me, what is J.P. Morgan up over the last 3-4 months?
It's traded like a mega cap.
It's up a lot,
stock,
right? It's been around a new high.
Yeah. Right.
Year to date, it's up near 9%. Over the last year, it's up 44%.
I know. Look, take the name off it. Take the name off. Off Facebook or Meta, rather, and tell me which one it is. You'd be hard-pressed to distinguish between. But look, here's what I'd say. You reference, like, ARK, and that's like seeing a movie, and the second half is phenomenal, but the first half really sucked. ARK is still down from its peak of 140.
Oh, I understand that.
So it's had a good
pop. I'm just looking at, if you want a representation of, whereas some are saying, right, hey, bubble, 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 look to the non-profitable growthy names that have gotten, I think, a lift, at least in part, on the idea of rate cuts.
Right, and I do think there are segments of the market, and you're pointing out one, that are bubbles. I look at bubbles where you get these valuations in stocks for companies that just don't have the fundamentals at all. I don't view Meta, I don't view Alphabet, I don't view Amazon as a bubble. I view them as slightly overvalued here, even though I own them, but yet they have fundamentals. So it's a question of they'll catch up to the valuation, whereas the bubble sector of the market that you're pointing to, and some of the SPACs that have even had a little bit of bounce, there is no catching up because they're up on air, and that bubble will get burst and they'll go back down to earth.
I have in front of me, and I have on my FactSet home screen, okay?
Right.
Everything is red, except for one name that jumps out at you. And it should jump out at you this week. It's Apple, because it's coming off its best day since May of 2023. So we're talking about nearly a year for shares of Apple, which have been sleeping now for a long time, wondering if they've now woken up. 175 pushing 176. It's been a minute since the stock has been above 170. It's been like 168, 169. You figure, okay, the chart looks terrible. It may be going down further. I don't know. Maybe not so much. Bill Baruch, he's our committee member, of course. He added to his position in Apple. He joins us now on the phone to talk about it. Why was this the moment to do that?
Hi, thanks for having me on. The thing that we looked at was everybody's made a really great point about the risks out there and how the puck is going to commodities and materials, and we were prepared for that. In fact, Apple was a casualty in preparing for that. So we were about half the benchmark, half the S&P's weight in Apple, and began trimming it when it was in the mid to high 180s. The news yesterday, I think, is what everybody has wanted from Apple this year that hasn't gotten it, is the innovation. Finally, something new from Apple. I think that's a very important point. And it held the October low. So what we're doing is moving back to get to the benchmark weight. The S&P is about 5.5% of Apple. We're now back above 4% from below 3%. And I see us adding more. I think I like to buy things when they're unloved. And Apple has been unloved. And if it does turn to have a good year, there is some room for it to run on a relative basis on the year. And the outlier here is if we start to see spending and services pick up in China, I think Apple could really pick up that as a tailwind as well.
You think this week is an inflection point then for these shares?
I do. I think fundamentally, from a narrative standpoint, are they innovating? And then technically, by holding that October low, 160 to 170 is a big level for Apple, and it's responded. I think you need to see buyers show up at that level, and they have.
Yeah, I mean, this stock seemed like it was destined to maybe test 160. And look, maybe it still will. But this is an interesting move to keep an eye on. We'll kick it around on the desk. Bill, thanks. Good weekend to you. We'll see you on the set again soon. So Goldman weighs in on this today. They trim the price target. They go to 226 from 232. They do reiterate the buy, though. Amy, they say any weakness is potentially an entry point. You know, Baruch obviously doesn't use it as a full entry point for a new position, but he says, hey, stock's down, I'll add to it.
I think it's a really hard call at this point. I still think Apple is expensive for the growth that it's going to put up, you know, even with the new innovation and new products. It's just so big. It's hard to grow that fast. It's trading at 25 times. We own it. We're underweight the stock. I think it's a great company, whether it's a great stock. I mean, Steve and I were talking about it. We were on the desk together when on the show when it crossed $3 trillion. It's now 2.6 or 2.7. And at that point, everyone said it's going straight to $4 trillion, like dollar market cap. I think it's fine, but it's not something that we're really looking to add to generate a lot of alpha in the next year.
And if you own this for China, all the news headlines, including today, it's going the other way. AMD, Intel, China doesn't want using them anymore. China is pushing their domestic phone companies. So that continues to be a negative and a major overhang. There's a reason why Apple manufactured 14% of their phones in India. It should be 100%.
Those who have written off, Kevin, as you know, Apple shares over time, you know, have done so at their own peril, because this stock has been amazingly resilient over time because of the installed base. Any perceived lack of innovation has been overlooked because whatever they missed initially, they've done better than most secondarily. Now they have the AI story to look forward to, in which Evercore ISI says that they expect that story is going to unlock an iPhone super cycle. You've been adding to shares consistently, right?
Yeah, we're buyers of Apple. I mean, especially at these levels. I agree with what Bill said, with the exception of China. I agree with Steve there. That's not part of our thesis. It's not part of our narrative. But the we exited the position in November at 200. So I see these price targets going up to 226, 232. If it just gets back to 200, we'll be thrilled. But they have $100 billion of free cash flow over the past 12 months. It might not be the innovator, it might not be the growth engine, but they print money, and we like that part.
Hey, you've been burned in periods of time of like, hey, if Apple gets down to this certain level, and then I'll buy it, and it never reached the level that you thought it might get to, you and a lot of other people,
yeah.
Right? I mean, that just speaks to the resiliency of this name. Bill cites what feels like it might be an inflection point this week, new innovation on chips. Now, you want to get more negative on Apple ahead of AI?
Yeah, I don't want to get more negative. I'm not going to buy, and what I said to you, and this is consistent with what Bill said, is that holding that support at 168, which was that October, November low, was very important. It did that this week, okay, and that is important. So the question is, why not buy today? And I just go back to where I am on the market overall. It's really that simple. I do intend to add to Apple, but I just find it very hard on a day like today, in a week like we've had, to put any new capital to work, and so I'm just not going to do it.
When you say a week like we've had, are you talking about for the overall market or
the
a week like
market.
Apple's had where it's
for
up
the, for the
4 or 5% on the week?
For the overall market, because obviously I'll acknowledge and you'll point out Apple has had a good week and may well have inflected, folks.
Well, when do you want to add to it then? I mean, if you say you don't want to add to it on a down week, what are you going to add to it on a great week for the market?
Well, no, what I'm saying, thank you, I'll be more specific, is I think the market's going lower in the short term. And I think Apple will get caught up in that. It's been a nice week for Apple. I think Apple will get caught up in a downturn in the market of another 4 to 5%. Hey, if I'm wrong, I own shares. I may buy higher than here. I'll live with it, okay? But right now, my gut, my experience in the market says the market's going lower from here and Apple with it.
All right, so we got some new moves to get into as well. We're going to do that after the break. We do have some calls of the day to talk about. Kevin Simpson's made some more new moves. Steve Weiss has bought more of a certain name. I'll tell you about that and much more next.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
Let's hit these committee moves I wanted to get to. So, Kevin, you bought Honeywell.
Yeah, we initiated a new position in Honeywell yesterday, Scott. We think with everything that Boeing's doing wrong, companies like GE Aerospace, Honeywell can be beneficiaries. They're streamlining a lot of the business. Aerospace is the key component to it. But I think they can also be a beneficiary of restructuring, onshoring, the infrastructure play. So 2.2% dividend. Big share buybacks, solid dividend growth. It's been kind of a stalwart dog for a while too. So we're looking for something to break out a little bit here.
Okay, sold some calls in Freeport.
Freeport's been unbelievable. I mean, what we're seeing in gold and Freeport specifically has been fantastic. But the spike in volatility that we've had over the past 2 weeks is giving us opportunities to write premium. So if you have stocks that you're invested in, that are appreciated, I would take advantage of writing calls in here. We wrote a call for a $57 strike 2 weeks out. It annualizes out at 11% premium. And if that stock goes to 57 in 2 weeks, I'll ring the register, Scott.
All right. Weiss, you bought more Leidos.
I did. So, and we're seeing the stock up today. And the reason why it's up, it's really defensive. I mean, it's one of those rare companies where it's both growing and it's also defensive. And I use defensive in two senses of the word. Number one, it's got a defense business. It's about 50% of revenue. It's a $15 billion revenue company. And then they've got their civilian business. If you go through the airport, you see the scanners going through, you know, TSA, and then it's got a healthcare business. But where I like them in defense is they're not a metal bender only, okay? They are a technology company. You have new management coming in about a year ago. They're doing great things. The stock is cheap. This is one of my favorite holdings, actually, and I think it's going to keep moving higher and higher. So you know, it's a pretty full position for me, but on dips, I'd buy more.
Okay, so Cisco is in the news today, Jimmy. It's one of our calls of the day. Positive Catalyst Watch opened at your favorite financial institution, Citi. Price target's 52. They do rate it neutral. What do you think?
Yeah. There's more than a little bit of a show me story here, Kevin. I know you're in the name as well. And the real question here is whether Splunk can reinitiate earnings growth here. I think it can, but this is definitely a show me situation. Absent Splunk, things have been pretty dull at Cisco, to say the least. A lot of tech spending has gone outside of Cisco's products, more to AI and things like Oracle and NVIDIA. So they really need that Splunk acquisition to start shining through here.
All right. Do you want to take Kevin McDonald's? Lowered the comps at Loop Capital today. unfavorable weather and increased competition are going to hurt comps, they say. $357, they maintain the price target.
Seems a little high on that price target, based on the news that they're talking about. Also, the fact that the stock can't seem to get above 300. So if you want to have a price target at McDonald's, I think 300 is a lot more appropriate than 357. We've owned it for over a decade. I like the stock. It's a great dividend compounder. But I don't know that I'd be rushing into it at this moment. And I think the price target's too high.
Weiss, you want to talk some Netflix with me? Because the price target gets bumped today to 700 from 600 at Morgan Stanley. Overweight is the rating.
I'd be hard-pressed to think of a week that went by where some analyst has raised their price target.
Well, they had to. I mean, the stock's at 620.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
But still, 700.
Yeah,
makes
look,
sense?
I mean, again, I think that, okay, maybe it's not overvalued because you've got a scarcity of a pure trading play here that's the leading player in the world, that's profitable, that can grow earnings as much as they want. They still have tremendous leverage in their monthly subscription costs, which they've raised over the past couple of years, but still is below where others with less of a product offering are pricing their product. So at the end of the day, you're going to have two players. One's going to be Disney, and one's going to be Netflix of any scale. So I'm staying on board again. Maybe I'll get the opportunity over the next few days to buy more, but still a relatively small position, unfortunately.
Amy, let's talk some ASML,
sure.
Which you say you're looking to trim. The target got trimmed today to $1,052 from $1,072.
Very precise, yes.
At Bernstein, they still rated outperform. Why are you looking to possibly trim it here?
It's just had such a run. It's such a great company, but if you just look at the chart, it's a straight line up at this point, over 40 times. I think the story's known. I think all of semis have run, and they've gone with it, and I just think the space is probably a little overdone.
All right. We will come back. We're going to step into some earnings next week, get you set up ahead of that. Mike Santoli with his midday word is right after this break.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to The Half. I'm Bertha Coombs with your CNBC News update. The Philippines foreign minister said in a meeting at the State Department today that his country will assert its South China Sea rights. Tensions have been rising between Manila and China over the strategic waterway. It comes after the U.S., Japan, and the Philippines met and announced new security and economic ties at a White House summit. A Houston, Texas hospital has stopped its liver and kidney transplant programs after it was discovered that a doctor allegedly manipulated patient records to make some of them ineligible for transplants. According to New York Times report, citing officials, the Department of Health and Human Services says it is investigating. And a golden teacup worth 10.4 million yen, or about $68,000, was stolen from a Tokyo department store, Takashiyama. The teacup was taken from an exhibition event at the store, and the Tokyo police say the suspect planned and carried out the crime with the event in mind. He has yet to be found, or the teacup, which is made of 24-karat gold. Scott, back over to you.
All right, Bertha, appreciate that. Thank you, Bertha Coombs. Our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, joins us now with his midday word. I'm sure there's a lot on your mind in the we're about session lows, Mike, it looks like.
Yeah, and it's at least relevant in the short term. I was pointing out a little while ago that the lows of the day in the S&P the past 3 days have been exactly the same spot, just under 5140. It kind of goes back to last Thursday's low as well. So the market was trying to make a bid to maybe contain things within that 2% pullback. Seems like it's a little looser than that right now. it's tough to really tease out, you know, exactly what we should extrapolate from today's actions. Obviously, you got the geopolitical overlay and the risk-off tone in a lot of the macro indicators. So it doesn't necessarily tell us if it's all about recalibrating inflation and the Fed. I do think that investors are going to welcome if we can get the luxury of turning attention more to corporate earnings next week.
But I mean, you think a lot of this has to do with just not wanting to be long into the weekend where you do have some, you know, potential geopolitical headlines testing nerves?
There is an element of that for sure. I think, though, that the fact that the market is unable to ignore those or look through them right now and you're bidding for protection and, you know, it also feeds into what has been the existing dynamic, which is gold rocketing higher for pick your reason. But it's definitely not reasons that people are comfortable with, you know, the broader economy and policy setup. And then, of course, the reflation trade in general going on. So I think, you know, you have a little bit of a failure of that familiar equity rotation that has supported the market right now. So I think that just tells us that essentially 4 weeks ago, as we raced to highs, or let's say at least by the end of the first quarter, everyone knew we're due for a pullback. Now we got a lot of excuses for one.
Yeah, that's a good point, as always. I'll see you on closing bell. Yeah. Michael, thank you. Still ahead, we'll give you the trades on United Health and Genuine Parts, Taiwan Semi, and more. All of those ahead of some key earnings next week. There's the board. It's busy. We're back after this. Saw the Dow at session lows. I don't want to blow past that. We'll keep our eye there. We've got a sizable sell-off, which may be accelerating to about 41 minutes past the hour here. Let's talk about some earnings that are on the tape next week. United Health. Kevin, I'm coming to you on this. On a low note, too, because the stock hit a new 52-week low today, has not been trading well at all. What are your expectations now?
Well, I would not be a buyer in advance of earnings. Now, full disclosure, I was a buyer last month at 470. To your point, it's 440, a 52-week low. But they've got just, they're taking punch after punch, and I'm very, very close to being stopped out of the position. I want to wait and see what the guidance looks like. If it's a sell the news event, we may be selling the position.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the Dow over Jimmy's head. The Dow's 38,000 even, just gave it up for a minute and just got it back. A lot of it, apparently, certainly what the narrative seems to be today is all about geopolitical concerns, Iran and Israel, and that has caused a spike in commodities, a spike in the VIX, and that sell-off in stocks. Yields obviously down on a flight to quality, too, a flight to safety into bonds. All right, let me get back to the stocks at hand here, but we'll keep our eyes on that. 454 or so is where the decline is on the Dow. So J&J is Tuesday before the bell. You sold it last week.
Yeah, I would stay away from that also. I have no expectations for J&J. I would not be a buyer into the print.
Okay, Jimmy, Genuine Parts, that reports next week. You own that?
I feel pretty good about it. I mean, we know that the average age of cars on the road is very, very old, and people are having to repair them. That should inure to the benefit of General Parts.
Weiss, Taiwan Semi.
Look, Taiwan Semi, they've got no spare capacity, so you think the stock, the earnings should be pretty good. However, the stock's anticipating good earnings, so the risk-reward going into it, if that's why you're buying it for the earnings, I wouldn't do that.
Kev, P&G?
Wait till after the earnings. I think the earnings will be good, but I think the stock will sell off. You'll get a buying opportunity the week after next.
Another stock that's been around a high is Amex, right, Amy?
Yep.
Next, a week from today before the bell.
Yep, we own it. I think it will be fine in the quarter, but I think it's really well-positioned with high-end users and travel.
All right. We were going to take another break. When we come back, we'll have more on this sell-off. We're at the lows of the day. S&P's down by more than 70 points. The Dow's down by 450. Back right after this. All right, welcome back. In light of this sell-off, we want to continue to discuss this market day because it's shaping up to be a difficult one. Weiss, as we said, just to recap, gold up, oil up, dollar up, bonds up, stocks down, and anxiety rising.
Yeah, I mean, actually today, you're seeing the yield, which is kind of surprising. We were talking about this, Amy and I. the yields have come down on bonds today.
So yeah, well, there's obviously
a
movement
into...
going
up. I'm sorry. But you would expect that... they went down, sorry. But you would expect that with this kind... that the reasons that are driving this, that there'd be a flight to safety. You're not seeing it. So...
Well, you are seeing it.
Yields are down.
I'm sorry. You are. I'm looking right here. Obviously, I'm thinking of something else, but my mind's distracted.
What are you looking at? Are you looking at the Masters?
I'm looking at the market, and the stocks that were green are now red, so it's a pretty bad day. But I tell you, here's what I would say. If I thought this was all about geopolitical, I'd buy it, because that is always an opportunity to buy. Always. So...
You know, something, and we're talking about yields, something that we've totally blown past is how bad that 10-year auction was on Wednesday. Now, this may be a little bit inside baseball, folks, but it was awful. And, you know, you can't have the sort of deficit and debt levels that we're running at right now and have bad auctions be a routine thing. That's been weighing on the market as well. So, and by the way, I agree with you, Steve. If it were just geopolitics, you buy on, you know, you buy at 359 on Friday, but it's not. There are fundamental issues. I want to be clear, though. I don't think this is a fatal market. You got a strong labor market. You got people in business on the balls of their feet, leaning into growing their businesses. As long as we don't start actually raising rates on the short end, we should be fine.
It's hard, Kev, to, you know, if you are worried about geopolitics more than anything else today, it's kind of hard to feel good going into the weekend long.
You won't. You wouldn't. If you're a trader, if you have the ability to get to cash, that's what we're seeing. They're going to cash. Why wouldn't you? Now, I'm an investor that's a long-term player. I don't have the ability to try to time the market. But you can rest assured that any quant or hedge fund is going to cash because it's not worth the risk. Even if, to Steve's point, it's short-term, why take the risk?
But let's also just underscore the idea that the overall narrative hasn't changed.
Yes, you're right. Scott, you're right. And I'm leaping in here only because I'm having a hard time being short-term negative and long-term positive. But based on what you're saying, the narrative hasn't changed, all right? The Fed still wants to cut rates, and that means you can be positive until year end. But the news that we've gotten this week in the short term should make you a little queasy.
Some would suggest, though, that, you know, earnings expectations, Amy, have come down enough that there are going to be, quote unquote, easy beats, and that earnings are going to help save the day.
But they haven't, and that, I think that's
a
problem.
We just started.
But so far we had some beats, and they haven't translated to the stocks going up. So as much as earnings expectations have come down, the market is still up a lot year to date, and that means that embedded expectations are higher. And I think part of what we're seeing today is just the reaction to good numbers not coming through in stocks responding
positively. Can I just put this in perspective?
Are you back on Planet Halftime?
I'm back here now. I've adjusted to all the red in my portfolio.
Okay,
so
all right.
You can understand how unusual that is for me.
Understand.
Look, I think if you take a look at the market overall, number one, not a disaster today, down less than 2% on the move we've had. But if you look at a chart of the S&P, for example, you're seeing lower highs. So to me, that's a troubling sign. And I would think you'd still have a market that's not, the bull market's not over, to Jim's point. But I do think that we've been overdue for a nice correction.
Sure. Maybe you get tested too. You know, crude oil approaching 90, it raises all sorts of other issues. If WTI, it's at 85, 86, if that gets to 90. I mean, gold has been, as you know, Kev, on a massive run. You had some firms today out talking about even, you know, greater numbers than you're seeing here.
I mean, we own Agnico Eagle, we own Freeport, we own Marathon, ConocoPhillips, Chevron. They didn't do anything for us last year. It was all about the Magnificent Seven. But we're sitting back, you know, enjoying 2024. And I think a diversified portfolio at times, you know, can be really validated when you see a day like today. And I do think it's more geopolitical than anything else. To your point, CPI wasn't that bad. It was a little tiny bit hotter than expected. PPI was pretty much in line. It's inflation that's sticky and holding. It's not inflation that's moving higher.
The mega cap sell-off today is certainly something worth noting, or maybe the growth space in general. AMD, you wouldn't necessarily consider a mega cap as we do the other big names in the group, but it's down 4.5% right now. But, you know, Meta's lower, Microsoft is lower, Amy, NVIDIA's lower. That stock had been in correction territory. Now it had a nice rebound over the last couple of days. But even Apple, let's show an intraday of Apple if we could, because that, I said it earlier, of all the red on my screen, Apple was the one sticking out because it was hanging on a green. It looks like it could give that up before I finish this. My point is, it looks like it could give it up before I finish the sentence.
Yeah. Right.
And it just gives you the kind of an idea of the kind of pressure that's in the market today.
Yeah, I think this is partially going to be a rotation under the surface away from the large cap growth stocks, more towards cyclicality. And I think if there is anything over the weekend and it does raise the energy price, you're going to see more of that in the future weeks.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with finals on the other side.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
We're going to have a big one on the bell on this Friday, given this sell-off. We'll take you through the final hour, and we're going to do it with some good guests, too. Tom Lee will join me, along with Avery Sheffield, Bryn Talkington, Rick Heitzman, too. What does this do to the capital markets idea? Coming back, IPOs, what's going on in tech? We're going to talk to Rick Heitzman, the VC, about that, too. Let's do final trades. Amy, why don't you start us off?
Sure. Starting with Shell. We like the energy space in general, but Shell's cheap, even compared to the others, 12% free cash flow yield.
Okay. Steve Weiss.
I would buy the two-year. Now, look, I'm not sure if the yield's higher or lower today. Just kidding, Scott.
Right, when you figure it out, you let us know.
It's a 4.9 yield. I mean, it's a great place to hide.
Amgen, Kevin. Scott, Amgen, 3.2% dividend, 14x forward multiple. They're getting in the weight loss game. We love the stock.
AMGN. Jimmy.
Scott, I'm just sitting tight for now.
All right, I'll see you on closing bell. The exchange is now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.